Hello and welcome to Crime Theories Off the Record, the podcast series where I talk about my interpretation of crime theories. This is your host, Karen. Hello everyone. Today things will be different as I won't be covering a theory, but will venture into the concept of restorative justice. But before I jump into this, I would like to remind everyone that I'm not an expert in every aspect of my field, but I have researched the topic. Consistent with labeling theory, the four contemporary perspectives review in past episodes call attention to how the quality of the societal reaction to offenders may have the unanticipated consequences of deepening people's criminality. In last week's episode, I briefly mentioned how two recent policy developments are informed by this line of theorizing: restorative justice and prison reentry programs. Today, I want to focus on restorative justice and why this could solve specific crime problems. Perhaps the most significant recent development in criminal justice in the United States and other nations is restorative justice, or so it might seem. In traditional criminal justice, the state acts presumably on the victim's behalf to sanction offenders. The intent of the sanction often is to exact a measure of just deserts for the victim and the larger community by inflicting some discomfort on the offender. Restorative justice, however, rejects the logic that equates that state's harming of an offender with victims receiving any meaningful sense of justice. The risk is that the state's action will only increase the overall harm inflicted without achieving a value. As an alternative, advocates of restorative justice suggest that the guiding principle of the criminal sanction should be to decrease harm by restoring the victim to their prior unharmed status and the offender to the community. Instead of a traditional trial in which the state is an adversary prosecuting defendants, such advocates favor a victim-offender conference in which the state functions more as a mediator. In such a conference, which often is attended by family members and interested members of the community, the offender's actions are condemned or shamed, and the offender is encouraged to take responsibility, express remorse, and apologize to the victim or victims. Offender accountability is integral to the proceedings. Thus, efforts are made to design plans for how the offender will compensate the victim or victims, restoring the victim by undoing the harm experienced, such as restitution, and community service also might be required. Off the record, though this might be a new practice for the collective we, it is not a recent phenomenon for indigenous people. For instance, the traditional Navajo justice system, along with other indigenous justice systems, traditionally relied on reestablishing harmony more than on punishing law violators. Those who violated community norms faced a system based on clan relations and mediation. However, because of European colonization, the dominant system began to take away the indigenous people's ability to deal with crime and criminality in their communities. So not only did European colonization lead to the colonization of bodies, land, language, and culture, but also systems. The goal of restorative justice is to reintegrate the offender into the community, providing the support necessary to accomplish this end. Throughout this process, the offender is treated fairly and is respected. The offender's actions, but not personally, are shamed, and the offender is brought into a context where it is possible to be restored to society without facing the continuing stigma of being an ex-con. The restorative justice movement has gained strength from several resources, ranging from evangelical Christians and victim rights advocates to peacemaking and feminist criminologists. Still, Braithwaite's 1998, 1999, 2002 shaming theory has furnished a significant intellectual justification for restorative justice. And if you need a refresher on any of the theories that will be discussed, feel free to revisit past episodes. In Braithwaite's terms, restorative justice is built on the premise of reintegrative shaming rather than stigmatizing shaming. His perspective is critical of state-centered punishment because its quality is typically disintegrative and crime-inducing. By contrast, Braithwaite's reintegrative approach seeks to shame the crime, still not the criminal, and find ways to reattach the offender to conventional society. Similarly, Sherman's defiance theory could be receptive to restorative justice. Because offenders are treated with respect and fairness, his model could predict that restorative justice could be far less likely than traditional criminal justice sanctions to foster defiance and increase criminality. It remains to be seen, however, whether restorative justice is an approach capable not only of growing justice, but also of reducing offenders' criminal involvement. Because restorative justice programs are mainly directed toward minor offenders, their impact on chronic severe offenders is open to question. Studies assessing these interventions, especially randomized experimental program evaluations, are in short supply. There are some promising results, but also conflicting findings. Furthermore, when positive findings are forthcoming, it is often difficult to determine whether reductions in recidivism are due to the restorative features of the program or to other services, such as counseling, provided to offenders. One of the most systematic assessments of the effectiveness of restorative justice programs has been provided by a meta-analysis of 39 studies evaluating the impact on recidivism of restorative justice interventions. They reach three conclusions. First, the effects of restorative justice interventions are relatively small, but they are significant and more extensive in more recent studies. Second, when restorative justice interventions are court-ordered, they do not affect recidivism. This conducted in a non-coercive environment and that attempt to involve victims and community members collaboratively achieved the most considerable reductions in reoffending. Consistent with the work of Braithwaite 2002 and Sherman 1993, this finding indicates that a less stigmatizing sanctioning process may be more effective with offenders. Third, restorative justice interventions appear more effective with low-risk offenders than high-risk offenders. When focused on high-risk offenders, that is, those with a high probability of recidivating, it appears that restorative justice interventions may not be sufficient by themselves to counteract the solid criminal tendencies of these individuals. For this group, it might be necessary to combine a restorative justice intervention with rehabilitation programs that target known criminogenic risk factors for change and that have been shown to decrease reoffending among high-risk criminals. It should be noted, however, that Sherman and Strang 2007 dispute this finding. Their review of studies leads them to conclude that restorative justice seems to reduce crime more effectively with more rather than less serious crimes. Future research on the differential effects of restorative justice interventions by risk level is warranted. Off the record, if you're interested in learning more about restorative justice regarding sexual assault, check Gretchen Casey's TED Talk, Restorative Justice, Repairing the Harm After Sexual Assault. Gretchen Casey is an advocate for victims of sexual assault. In 2016, Gretchen launched Unshamed.org, a platform dedicated to helping connect victims of rape with a supportive community through messages of hope, resilience, and compassion. As an extension of this project, Gretchen also led a local Me Too campaign in Gainesville, Florida, intending to bring visibility to the people behind the statistics of sexual assault and an end to victims feeling ashamed by someone else's behavior. Her goal has been and continues to be helping survivors of sexual assault regain control of their lives, or if you prefer, you could always watch the documentary Burning Bridges.
Spoiler alert!
Burning Bridges is about the arson of Moots Bridge in Pennsylvania. Six young men, all in their early 20s with no previous criminal record, burned down a historic covered bridge in a small town in Pennsylvania and were charged with arson. This bridge was an essential part of the town's history and identity. As a result, the public reaction was strong against these young men. The Restorative Justice Conference included community members and the people involved and their families. The documentary is approximately 35 minutes long and does an excellent job of explaining how the restorative justice process works and showing critical parts of it.
Thank you for listening and choosing this podcast. This episode is brought to you by Anchor. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify or whatever platform you're listening from. And don't forget to tune in for the next episode.
Off the record, if you need help visualizing these theories, go check us up on Instagram at ct.offtherecord.